There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Become a patron. Patreon.com/goingofftrack.
Suck on our teats to help us not suck on the corporate teat.
Yes, I do think you could be a front man.
Wait, indulge me. Tell me why.
I mean, yeah, if you could sing, you could. Why not?
I mean, I could get on stage. I feel like...
You're a good-looking guy, Benny.
My strong suit would just be between-song banter. I mean, can you make a career out of only that?
No, please don't.
I feel like that would definitely be my strong suit as a front person. And, you know, I'd be like the accessible front person. Like, hey, like, come say hi, you know, like, I'll come have a drink or something.
There are those people. And they're usually the ones that are incredibly talented, so they don't have to have attitude.
I wonder, though, if I was like a front person all those years, if I could have avoided the excesses and indulgences that I did avoid.
No way.
You know, like, I feel like being a drummer, it was a lot easier. You know, I probably got offered like 50% less drinks, 50% less drugs, 80 to 90% less women as a result. So, like, I feel like it was easier to kind of lay back in the cut, take care of your job, stay professional, nice and profesh.
You know,
you're just the drummer. You
in
know?
My experience, and I bet you've seen this, the front man's an easy target, but there's a large percentage of fans who are almost too intimidated by the front person. And I've definitely been witness to.
Yeah, I've seen that.
The
too.
Girls going for the drummer and not the guitar player. What?
You don't even understand that. You're like, excuse me, miss? You I have know those notes you were just hearing?
I have sparkly pants on. Hello?
Yeah. Well, I definitely have seen that reaction. And that is one of the reasons I've always been happy not to be a front person is like, I've walked out of a backstage before, not a backstage, but like out into, you know, the back of a venue where like some people are waiting to like meet or get an autograph or something. And, you know, when I walk out, it's pretty comfortable normally. You know, I've had some awkward moments where I like walk out and say hello and no one asks for anything. And I actually like began to just ask. I'm like, hi, like, do you want anything for me or are you just, you know, waiting for Brian? Like, you know, just ask straight up. And then people usually are like, oh, hey, dude. But you kind of got to like break the ice. It's sort of awkward.
Right.
And I've seen that times 10 with like singers because people, A, they don't know what to say. But then there's also like people have a very deep connection to lyrics, you know, and sometimes they think they're being spoken to directly. You know, they feel like they are. They feel something from it. It helps them get through something in a tangible way. And it's, you know, like it or not, it's not the snare drum that got him through that. Like it was, you know, the messaging of the song. So I think just the message of it just comes through like a little more powerfully. It's almost like you're meeting by default, like in your head, it's just like meeting a much more iconic person, you know?
Yeah.
And just because I look like Danny Trejo, I'll talk a little baseball with you, you know? It's just different.
You're the better long hang, right? You know?
Yeah, yeah. But speaking of touring and being intimidated by people, when I first went on tour with Against Me, oh boy, was I intimidated.
Mm.
Scary group. You know, they just like had their thing.
They it's definitely
like,
had a thing.
Against Me. This is like my show. This is how we do it. Like, you're welcome to come along. It was like kind of rad. And I really like, you know, forever will be thankful for getting on that tour and also sort of just watching the right band in action at the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were doing things in a way that I just really appreciated. The way they toured, the kind of show they were doing, just like getting up and pounding like this really, really quick run of songs with no bullshit in between. Not a lot of bands were doing that. And I was like, wow. I remember we saw Against Me the first night in that tour and we're like, we need to be better than we are.
Yeah.
Because we are going to get blown the fuck off this stage like every night. But then on top of it, you know, James and Laura, they don't suffer fools lightly, you know?
Yeah.
So if you make like an off-color comment, you act a little weird, you do something that someone else might give you a pass on, you're probably not getting a pass over there, you know?
Right.
And even to the point, Against Me would bring this kicker table around, you know, foosball for the layman, and literally a fold-up one that would live in the bay of their bus, I think sometimes even in the van, and they were quite good. Really?
Oh, no, really?
Laura and Andrew particularly. Laura is like the color of money. Like straight up pool hustler. She doesn't take people's money.
Right.
She'll be like, oh, you want to like have a game? You're like, sure. And all of a sudden you're just getting smoked. Then you find out the rule is if you get shut out on the Against Me table, you have to crawl underneath it in front of everyone. So they shame you. If you get shut out, they shame you.
Really?
And make you crawl under the foosball table. I believe I had to do it once.
Do you have to stay under there for like the next game?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to. The only drinks you can have are the things that spill off the top. Yeah. No, it's not that bad. But yeah, all that being said, you know, it's one of those bands that takes a minute to crack.
Right.
You know, and kind of get on the inside. And I dig that, you know, it's like, one thing I don't like about touring is kind of that fake friendliness sometimes when people get really, really intimate, really, really quickly. And the older I get, I'm not certain why. So I kind of appreciated the honesty of all of it. And I've always had a great relationship with him as a result.
Nice.
Yeah. So now James is, making these pedals that the guys in Mercy Union have been using. Yeah, they're very cool. And it's crazy that he really just kind of conceptualized it and executed it all within, you know, the COVID timeframe. It's pretty remarkable for all the things we've been hearing about the past year and how people are trying to stay productive at home and all the things they're doing. James, he might have won.
That's what I was thinking.
You know,
This is definitely the best, like, COVID startup story I've heard.
It's good. Yeah, it's really good. And even like there's such a market for this stuff. How many guitar nerds were sitting around all year tinkering with their pedal boards, just wanting to get weird, you know?
Yeah, I was never a pedal guy. I was always the plug it in and go guy. Later, I kind of started to get into pedals. And I have a few things now. Like, I get it now because it's like you don't have to commit, you know, like you get a pedal, you play it for a while, then you like trade it off to another guy or you sell it, you get another one. Yeah. So it's like, you know,
people
even though,
are fickle. You are fickle.
Even though some of these pedals like can get pretty expensive, like you're not committed to them. It's not like when you go buy a guitar for fucking $3,000.
It's interesting. There's really nothing for drums that's equivalent to that.
No, there's not.
Yeah, there's not.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You could get percussion toys. That's about it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to trade in my tambourine for a much brighter tambourine with just a little bit more resonance on it. Yeah. No, it's not happening. All right. Well, this was a nice long one. We got into lots of fun stuff and I don't know, play the train.
It's going on track!
So what's going on, James? Thanks for doing this. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. I'm sitting in lovely New Jersey.
I know.
In, a room that technically used to be my son's nursery.
Oh, okay.
In, yeah. And now I'm surrounded by boxes and piles of pedal supplies and such.
That's awesome.
Yes.
I know. We've been in a very Jersey theme in the podcast for a few weeks, and we've had Chris Gethard, Mikey Erg, you know, some of the New Jersey legends.
Yeah, I know. I'm a transplant, so I don't know if I can like live up to
I don't know, James. Like that's where I think I'm starting to give you like a little bit of a crown because, well, A, your wife's native.
Well, technically she's a transplant as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's Canadian.
Oh, goodness.
I know, but I mean, I think that's a plus. Like anytime you can draw a Canadian to your graces, I mean, that's definitely a bonus because they're like, you know, they're right up there with the Australians. They're super nice, you know?
That is true. And I guess it's harder to like cement yourself as a native New Jerseyan if you have like roots in the Confederacy or something, you know? like maybe a Canadian just like is a little freer to come down here and do what they want, you know?
Yeah, I back that.
Yeah. But yeah, between like, you know, I know Vanessa as a New Jersey person personally and North Jersey, which is like the most Jersey shit you can get.
Oh, my God. It is so Jersey.
Yeah. And then, you know, your son, you know, basically born and bred in Jersey,
yeah.
Right?
Like, born in Hackensack.
So you're raising one, you know, like,
yeah.
And you have a lot of years under your belt.
It's true.
There's always been that strange, like, Gainesville, New Jersey connection for whatever reason. Like
there has been?
Well, I guess it was more for Hot Water. Like they had like a real thing up here with a bunch of bands, you know, early on.
That's true.
You know, so yeah. I saw Hot Water in like basements up here and stuff.
Right on.
But yeah. You know, so what do you declare yourself now?
I don't know. I mean I think I have to make up my own title.
Right.
Yeah. There's like, I don't know. Man,
you're
I don't
like
know.
The reverse snowbird. You know, it usually goes
it's
the other
true.
Way.
It's true. I've gotten that a lot. And yeah, everyone there like, oh, you're going back up to Jersey. They're like, oh, prepare for all the Sopranos memes you're going to get. And,
right. Right.
You know, I don't know. I guess, I mean, I Florida blood, Florida, New Jersey blood, Florida heart.
Oh, I like that. The t-shirt's coming.
Yeah.
Now, like from a perspective of yours, like someone who, you know, was raised in Florida and then came up here. So really got the, you know, the shock and awe of like what it's actually like the cultural difference was probably noticeable. I mean, are we as insane as people make us out to be?
I mean, it's a different kind of insane from Florida.
Right.
Like, it's more like, Florida's just like out in the open, like wild ass crazy.
Mm.
And up here, people are, you know, like you're kind of like almost surprised by how crazy people are in Florida because of all of the, I don't know, like the memes and Florida Man and like right. all the crazy stories, you know, and you're like, holy shit, like that's insane. And here, like people are just, I think it's not so much like crazy or rude. It's just honest. people are just like, I don't know, just more out in the open. Like there's no hiding it. It's just like, you know, if you're an asshole, someone's going to tell you you're an asshole.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's true. My 40 years in Jersey have got me in trouble quite a few times. For
and
stuff
I mean,
like
there's,
that.
They're not trying to be like jerks about it. It's just like you're pointing out. It's like, oh yeah, you know what? I am kind of being an asshole right now. You know, thanks.
Right. I think for us, it's like we got no time to waste. You know,
it's true.
Like, let's just get straight to the meat here. There's too many people, too much stuff to deal with.
Yeah, it takes forever to get anywhere. Like you just got to cut right. You know, get right to the point.
Now, I always notice, like, I mean, I guess my anecdotal experience is more from Nashville because I got to spend some extended time in that city, not just like passing through.
Okay. I didn't know that.
But I sort of, well, it's just because we did records there. And my experience there was, you know, the first couple weeks I was really, I was kind of like, my heart was warmed by the Southern hospitality thing. You know, I really dug it. I was like, this is nice. Like, people are really nice to me. And I'm like, and then it took me like another week or two to kind of feel like, I'm like, I think I'm being duped, you know? And then like, and like my Jersey flag kind of went up and I'm like, wait, why are you being cool, motherfucker? Like, what are you getting out of this? And it seemed like every time I tried to take a conversation to like the next step beyond casual, people were not interested in the least. So
okay.
Do you think like there's really more of an openness to people in the South, or is it's just like a kind of like this,
it's a ruse,
trail off of the custom? You think it's a ruse?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's funny because Adam Willard,
yeah,
he recently moved there, him and his wife.
Oh, really?
To Nashville. Yeah, they moved there from L.A. And his experience has been like, he's like, people are just genuinely nice here. So maybe I don't know, like the L.A. attitude, like maybe he just hasn't right. like seen through this, you know, the fakeness of the Southern hospitality.
Right, because he went from fake to fake.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, I guess people are just actually friendly here. They don't ignore you.
Right, right.
But yeah, he seems to love it. I don't know. I think Southern hospitality is real.
It is, right?
But so is racism.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of thing I got there, which was this idea that like, sure, they're going to be nice to me. But once they find out, you know, I don't go to church and I don't do this stuff, then they'll probably still be nice to me. But a certain like door would be closed to me, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where I found it surface. Like, they're willing to let you in to a point.
Is it really that like churchy down there, like in Tennessee?
I think so. I think down there, I much more got the impression that it's not like black or white, or, you know, it's more church or not. Like, that's kind of the feeling I got when I was in that town. You know, but this is also should be said in these conversations is I am a hypersensitive Jew from New York and New Jersey. So it's not like I'm like totally chill in these environments being open. Like, I'm sure I'm projecting like all sorts of stuff on people, you know?
I don't know. Sounds sketchy.
Yeah, probably. You've toured with us a lot.
Yeah.
So like, but you're from the St. Pete area originally, right?
Originally I'm from, South Florida, like Naples area.
Right.
Well, not like Naples, like Naples exactly.
Uh-huh.
That's where I was born. I lived there until I was about 15, and then I moved to St. Pete.
Okay.
And I lived there until I was 21.
Oh,
and
okay.
And then I moved to Gainesville.
So you were really like, your formative musical stuff and starting to play in bands and do all that was in St. Pete.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I played in, like, you know, with some friends and stuff down in the Naples area.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't really, like, join a real, I'm doing air quotes right now, right. band until I moved to the St. Pete area.
Well, I saw that, dude, if you're in a band called Scams with dollar logos, like, I don't
Come
know.
Come on, right?
It's pretty fucking legit to me. Like, as legit
we were
as anything.
Punk, too.
Like, how punk?
Like, mohawks, extra belt. Like,
you were charged
belts.
Up. You were fully charged up.
Fully charged. Like, you had a belt to hold up your pants, but then you also had, like, ancillary belts to just show how punk you were, you know?
Yeah. So was the band kind of your entry into, like, you know, being a punk, or were you like already kind of attaching yourself to that?
No, I was like already, you know, dressing and, you know, I was a punk kid like down in South Florida.
Okay.
And like, I remember I would still go up to St. Pete for shows because my older sister lived there.
Okay.
So I like, you know, when I moved there, I had like, you know, a bright green head of hair.
Okay.
And, you know, I was wearing like, I don't even know, like a Ramon shirt or something.
So you're already in it.
I was already, yeah, kind of like deep in the fold in my brain, you know?
Right.
And then getting there, I had met a few people just from being up there at shows and stuff, and just kind of, you know, developed those friendships from living there. And
right.
I didn't start playing music there. I actually, there used to be this old like local like music magazine you'd pick up at the venues and stuff called Focus.
Focus.
And I put an ad in the back of it in the classified section for like musician looking for people to jam with. And
hell yeah.
That's kind of how it all started.
So you didn't even put guitar, you put music. So you were willing to go into it like however you could get there?
Oh, I put guitarist.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Like, yeah, just looking for other people and listed some like influences, you know, and I think those were pretty like, I don't even remember who they were, but I'm sure it was like a smattering of like, what?
Right. I mean, were you full on like listening to crust punk or did you, or and stuff like that? Or did you also have kind of an outside influence? Because you always write with so much melody, you know?
It was mostly like, I don't know. It was like street punky kind of stuff. I think if I can remember correctly, it listed the influences like The Damned, The Ramones, Swingin' Utters. I think Fear was on there.
Okay.
Gorilla Biscuits. Like, it was just all over the place, you know? So it was, I don't know. Crass was listed as one of them. So it was just like a pretty wide array of you know, punk music.
What was that St. Pete scene like at the time?
It was cool. Like, you got all the shows. Like, I think it was like the one stopping point. Because bands back then, I think even now, don't really go to Florida all that often because it's really big.
Right, yeah.
And gas is expensive. So I think St. Pete kind of got lucky in the, like, you know, the radius clause and location to Orlando. So it's like, right. You know, a band would go to Orlando, but it's like, man, it's another like 5 hours to get down to Miami.
Yeah.
And Miami was like notorious for like bad shows.
Yes.
So it's like, we're not going to go to Miami. And then I'm sure people are like, well, why don't we go to St. Pete or Tampa? And Tampa had like a little bit of a scene, but it was more so, they had like this crazy, like DIY, like crusty kind of punk scene with like Assuck.
And oh, then
like,
right.
the,
yeah.
you know, the kind of like emo God, rock Assuck bands like Hank there. Shaw and yeah. stuff like that.
Sure.
And, but the venues over there were like mostly like nightclubs and pretty big, except for right. like for this right. record store, 403 Chaos, that did shows and stuff. And then, I mean, there were other venues like Blue Chair and stuff like that. But most bands, like, in St. Pete, there's the State Theater. There's this place called The Refuge. There's Junction Pizza that were all like smaller, more had like a, with the exception of State Theater, had like a more like DIY kind of feel.
Sure.
And I mean, you got everybody through there. Like every single tour stop, even like huge bands, like, huh. like would stop and play at the hockey arena. Like in when it was in St. Pete, it was called the Thunderdome.
Yeah. Nice. Like,
yeah. I mean, I saw AC/DC. I saw Kiss.
Wait,
I saw
you saw
Ozzy,
AC/DC at the Thunderdome?
At the Thunderdome.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, right?
Like, Come on.
That's some shit right there. That's awesome,
yeah,
right?
That's pretty fucking awesome. That's
crazy. Yeah. You're like, oh, what are you doing tonight? It's like, oh, I'm going to see AC/DC at the Thunderdome.
No big deal.
Yeah. And then that can segue directly into baseball. The Thunderdome turned into Tropicana Field.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So next time people are complaining about indoor baseball, just know that you're in the fucking Thunderdome.
Dude, I can't believe no like baseball announcers have like gotten it. Cause you know, you listen to a Yankees broadcast in Tampa, those two old fucks are complaining about the roof the entire time.
It's
like,
true.
If it hits the roof, they're just like, what is this? This isn't baseball. And the entire time they were missing an opportunity to go, Derek Jeter knocks one off the Thunderdome. You know, I mean,
exactly.
Come on.
It's true.
Missed opportunity, right?
It is
there.
A total missed opportunity.
That's funny, man. So,
and, okay, if I can like segue back into baseball for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, being being a Rays fan and moving up to the New York, New Jersey area at a time where the Yankees are so shitty.
Oh, yeah.
Listening
this must feel nice.
To sports radio. Is the most hilarious thing ever.
I can imagine. I literally just finished my sports podcast this morning and I made a plea
a plea to Yankees fans to relax.
Dude, they're like everybody. Oh my God.
It's
Yankees
insanity.
Fans are like the most fair weather motherfuckers I've ever listened to in my entire life.
It's pretty rough. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny.
I mean, it basically what it comes down to is if everything happening is not leading towards ring number 28, it all doesn't matter.
It's true.
You
it's
know, like, and you know, that's like, there's something about that I kind of admire. You know, they're always shooting for the top, but it's also, it's like a terrible place to live in. You know what I mean? Like, you got to enjoy the sport you're watching from time to time, you know,
it's
like
true. The journey is the destination, right? So like,
it's supposed to be our fucking entertainment, isn't it?
It's true.
Like, I don't want to be mad all the time. You know,
it's true. Like, and it's like something so like it doesn't matter. It's baseball.
No,
like,
it just doesn't matter. Yeah.
You're supposed to like take your mind off of things while sitting there for a few hours and being 100%. Like, oh, okay, that was okay.
100%. And I mean, you get to take, I've heard it in the last 6 months, how many times I've heard people talking about the Rays model of team building, you know? So
yeah,
like, that's just the new generation. You got to have a lot of respect for it right now. But we're going to get to more Rays stuff later.
Okay,
it off, this stuff, Brad is going to fall asleep, start like carving Slayer into his arm if we keep talking about baseball right now. Now, I heard in another interview, and it was so sweet. So like the pre-punk thing I want to get into a little with just how you kind of found guitar. And I heard you said your youngest music memory is sitting on the kitchen counter listening to Willie Nelson while your grandma made breakfast,
yes.
Which is like just the sweetest thing. And it gave me this really like, I don't know, just lovely, rustic, you know, Nelson Rockwell feeling of how you got into music. So like, what was that like? How young were you when that was going on?
I mean, I was probably, I don't know. I was probably like 5 or 6 at the time, wow. I guess, if I remember back to that.
Cool.
And, I don't know. Like growing up, like the music that was around was always like old country, you know?
Right.
Like Willie Nelson or Johnny Cash or, you know, like the typical, you know, like bigger names of country music at the sure. time. Conway Twitty, you know, Dolly Parton, stuff like that. And I don't know. I just really loved it. I still love that music.
Yeah. Was that like on the radio growing up? That was like just all over the place?
It was. Yeah. It was just the radio was always on and that was what was playing.
Sure.
And, you know, even... being at my Elvis, like my grandmother loved Elvis. So nice. Like, I mean, I know Elvis is a controversial topic these days, but, I still love Elvis. Yeah. I mean, just as an entertainer in general, I mean, you can't beat him.
No.
So yeah, it just really
You're not
started
gonna find pushback here.
Yeah. It just really kind of started there. And, I mean, growing up with like an older sister who is into like punk and rock and roll and stuff like that. That's where I started listening. Like the first, she gave me my first record, and I still have it. And it's a cassette and it's, Violet Femmes.
Oh, cool.
I still have that. And so I listened to that. And then like shortly after it was like the Ramones. And then, you know, went on to like, I don't know, just kind of sprouted from there. But yeah, I feel like I'm rambling. Sorry.
No, not at all. Like, I'm curious about
so that was like early introduction was to music was just all country. And then even like growing up with like having like those like the Ramones tapes or like Violent Femmes and like I got into the Misfits like a lot in the Clash and stuff like that. Like anywhere I was going, country music radio was on.
Right.
Like in the car. So, I mean, even stuff like Randy Travis and Alan Jackson and Garth Brooks and like Brooks and Dunn, like I can still hear like the beginning of a song and like the lyrics are burned into my memory. And I can just like, I can sing you every line to Boot Scoot and Boogie right now if you want, you know, like,
I mean,
I'm not going to, but I could like, it's like, you know, so yeah, it just kind of started there, and then the punk thing kind of came afterwards.
Was there like a personal connection for you in the way that like you know, sometimes I think it's easier to become a punk in New York or New Jersey or something because, you know, you're really not disconnecting too far from what's going on sometimes. It feels like a little bit less of a jump than when you do it in Florida. And, or, you know, especially like when I meet punks down in like Birmingham or something like that, I'm like, what the fuck did you have to do to become this? Did you enjoy any part of that personally? Like, do you enjoy that feeling of stepping out from the norm? Did you like being outside of the norm? Was that any of your attraction to punk?
Sure. Like, I mean, especially growing up in Naples, like there wasn't really a scene there at all. You know, like, I mean, there were no shows. Like, there was a community center that started having shows eventually, but like everyone there, I mean, Naples has changed a lot now. It's just full of like rich white people.
Right.
But back then, you know, like in the late 80s, early 90s, it was, you know, it was surrounded by farmland, like migrant farm workers.
Right.
Like the beach property was still like undeveloped. Like it was just, you know, like older families that still lived there.
Wasn't Naples some kind of like really, really active, almost like drug port?
Yeah, it was. Like if there's like, man, I think like Cocaine Cowboys and stuff.
Yeah.
And other like documentaries and even in like, you know, major motion pictures, like reference, even if they don't reference like Naples by name, like that is like where the drugs were dropped, like bales of cocaine and stuff were dropped into the ocean. And then people would pick them up in speedboats and then, you know, run them over around the Horn of Florida to Miami or even across like, you know, in cars and trucks, like across Alligator Alley to, over to Miami and stuff.
Right. Crazy.
But yeah, so, I mean, there was no scene there. It was just like a bunch of like, you know, kind of country bumpkin families. Like everyone wore cowboy boots and hats. And
wow.
Or
that's
they
crazy
were just
to
like,
hear because of the Naples I know, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, people were just like kind of surfer kids or, you know, like beach bummy kind of.
Right, right.
And then, I don't know, like me and my friends like didn't really fit into that. And
sure.
It was, I don't know, I was just more into like rock and roll and, I don't know, trying to be not really consciously making an effort to be different or standing out, but it just kind of happened, you know?
Yeah.
And being, you know, a 14-year-old kid with green hair in a, you know, in a town where everyone's driving like giant raised trucks and wearing cowboy hats and stuff, you attract a lot of attention if you want to or not, you know?
Did you take a lot of shit in those days? Did you have to fight a lot? Like,
yeah, I mean, it was, you know, getting like chased down the street and trucks and like people jumping out with like bats and, you know, just like crazy shit you would like, you know, getting called every name you could think of. I mean, it, I don't know. I guess it was pretty fun or I wouldn't have done it. Like, it's better than just like, I don't know, like conforming and trying to fit into shit you don't care about.
Yeah. I guess you dug the excitement a little.
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, it was a little exciting. It's more exciting.
Can you throw down a little, James?
If I have to.
I've
been known.
I could see it, you know. Listen, I know you don't think this about you, but you can be a kind of intimidating character. You're
That's
the type
ridiculous.
Of guy that I know for a little while where I'm like, I know I'm bigger than James and stuff, but he's coming off in a way that makes me think he knows something, you know? Like,
I've seen some shit, man, all right? Yeah.
So how does this kid with green hair like wind up meeting Laura?
I met Laura and our first bass player, Dustin, original bass player, the first day of high school in Naples.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
In Naples.
In Naples at Naples High School.
Oh, okay.
Went through my whole day of, you know, like being a kid with bright green hair walking around the school, getting fucked with and yelled at and stuff like that. And then, I had a friend, his name was Randy, who I lived, like, I didn't live in Naples proper. I lived like out in, what's called like the Estates, which was, this town called Golden Gate.
Okay.
Which is just out a little ways from like Naples proper. It's like its own technically city. And I haven't been there in, I don't even know, 30 years. So I can't tell you what it looks like now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so I lived like out there and I had a friend, his name was Randy Pickard.
Nice.
And, I met up with him. He was a year older than me and, he was in 10th grade. So I met up with him like the first day around lunch. And then he's like, oh, let's go over here. These are all the kids hanging out where all the punk kids are.
Right.
And, I like walked through this hallway out to the courtyard and, you know, that's where I met, Laura, Dustin, and, you know, a few other kids who are like, you know, skater kids or like punk kids. There weren't very many of us and we were like, you know, kind of tucked away in a corner by ourselves while, everyone else was, you know, doing what they did in high school.
Was there kind of like that instant bond because of what you talked about? I'm sure if you were dealing with that stuff, I'm sure they were as well. So was there kind of just that instant bond? Like, here we go. Like now we got some crew and it's us against them a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely the feeling of being like, oh, it's not just like me, you know, like, and my one crazy friend, Randy, out in the woods.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, oh, there's more of us. Like, this is cool. Like there's a little bit of, you know, like a scene going on here. And I mean, even like, Kevin, the original bass or drummer of Against Me, he was like even younger. He was in middle school at the time.
Uh-huh.
And like, he was around and then like his older brother, like was in a band that, you know, kind of, I don't even remember what they sounded like, but I want to say like Jane's Addiction kind of style.
Okay. Yeah.
But they were like, you know, it just like opened this doorway into like, you know, like even kids my older sister hung out with, like who went she went to a different high school, but she had like friends who were like, you know, they weren't necessarily like punk kids, but they were like, you know, the different kids, you know, like
punk adjacent.
Punk adjacent, exactly.
Yeah.
And then you started like seeing that. So you're like peeling back the layers and being like, oh, okay, this goes a little deeper than just, you know.
Right. Finding your people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like they were there. They were just hard to find.
Right. Despite the green hair.
Exactly.
What was Laura's vibe at 15, you know, similar to now or?
I guess pretty similar. Like, but like ultra punk, but like, like spiky black hair, leather jacket, like cut off shorts. Cause it's hot as fuck down there. You know?
Right. Yeah.
It's like the tropics basically.
Yeah. You can't rock like the,
if you're wearing jeans or pants, like they're slowly getting shorter and shorter.
That's funny.
It's,
how
like,
the,
it's just,
the,
it's yeah, the too weather, hot.
Yeah. The weather determines crust punk styling. Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I still have bondage pants, you know, but it's like, they're tight and hot. And, you know, I wasn't exactly the most felt little, you know, like punk kid.
Yeah.
I
hear you there. Punk fashion never sat well on my body.
Yeah. No, it was like, damn it.
I know. This looks so much better if I look cracked out and was like 110 pounds. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly. That's, and then I was like, wow, if I play like, you know, I had like a Stratocaster at the time. And I was like, if I play a bigger guitar, like a Les Paul, it kind of hides the fact that I'm like chubby. You know?
Right.
It's like that. I got to play bigger guitars.
So how did it go from like A to B, you know, where, you know, you were playing music together really fairly shortly after that. Right.
Not really. Like Laura and Dustin had known each other from, you know, even younger than that.
Okay.
And had like played music together.
Oh, so they already had a thing when you met them.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they would like play in Dustin's, we called it the basement, but it was technically the garage of his parents' house. And they had like a couple of things. Laura played bass originally. She was like an amazing bass player.
Is Dustin that why Laura's always online talking shit about bass players and stuff?
Probably. And Dustin was a guitar player and yeah, they had like a few different, you know, band incarnations and stuff like that. And I was just always kind of around like hanging out. And then like I had a few friends that I played with in up in or out in Golden Gate and Yeah. I mean, Laura and I didn't really start to play music together until I moved to Gainesville, actually.
Oh, okay. So Laura moved to Gainesville prior to you.
Yeah. Laura, like I moved when, like I said, when I was 15. So shortly after meeting, I moved up to St. Pete, but I always stayed in touch, you know, via landline phone. There were no cell phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And would like call and be like, hey, you know, like this show is going on up in St. Pete. Like I can get tickets.
Oh, cool.
And you know, my mom still lived in Naples. I lived with my sister up in St. Pete, and my mom like actually drove Laura and Dustin up to a show. I think drove them up to go see Fugazi.
Oh, no shit. That's cool.
Yeah. And then I don't remember how they got home, but I think they rode in the back of my mom's pickup truck. I might've been there too, actually. I might've been there for that.
I love an image of that. Like,
yeah, just like awesome. A couple punk kids driving up 75 in the early 90s.
In the bed of your mom's pickup.
In the bed of my mom's bright red Toyota Tacoma.
And to go see Fugazi, which is to top it off, even funnier. Yeah.
Pretty ridiculous. but yeah, and then being up in St. Pete, like, you know, I went to high school there, and then there were a few more punks, and it was like easier to find the scene just because of all the shows and stuff that happened there. And then I don't remember how old Laura was when she moved to Gainesville, but I'm guessing like 18.
Okay.
And then I was living in St. Pete. I tried to move up there, when I was like 19 or 20, and it didn't work out. We had like a really terrible living situation. Like it was like an office space that didn't have like a shower or a kitchen. God. It was pretty terrible. We would like go to friends' houses to like, we had like a hot plate, and we would like dumpster dive, like college kids dumpsters, to get like, you know, canned food to cook and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
you're proper in it.
And
it sounds like you were pretty much like, you know, I know a lot of punk kids move, but they still have something waiting for them if it doesn't work out. It sounds like you were really kind of out there on your own.
Yeah. I mean, when I moved up to St. Pete, lived with my sister for a while, and then I ended up moving out when I was 16.
Okay.
I met some friends in St. Pete that played in a band. That band was The Scams.
Okay.
And I kind of like connected with them at shows, and I basically convinced them that they were a three piece, and I convinced them they needed another guitar player, and that's how I ended up joining the band.
Cool.
And then when I was 16, I moved into the singer's apartment with his girlfriend.
Wow.
Because they had an extra room. And I've kind of lived on my own ever since.
That's wild.
Yeah, pretty insane, especially now being a father of a 9-year-old. Who's like, wow. Man, I was really young. That's crazy.
But it's cool. I like how in the, you know, when we do a lot of these interviews, it seems like, you know, a lot of the people were just like around in the right places and did this. I like how it seemed like you used your guitar to like be your, you know, tool to get you into like the things you needed to do and to like, you know, solidify your life a little bit.
I mean, yeah, I never really had like a plan of what I wanted to do. Like,
right.
I love music. I love playing music. Like all the things that go along with it. Like touring gear, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I dropped out of high school. I started working at a record store. I just played music. I talked my way into that band, and we never really did much, but we were like the thing in St. Pete for a while, as far as local bands go.
Sure.
And then even like, joining against me, like Laura was going on tour, and I basically I talked my way into that too. Like I was like, hey, if I buy all the guitar strings for the tour, can I play guitar and go on tour?
Yes.
And
how many strings did that require at that
not
time?
Not very many.
Couldn't have been
I think it was like a box of like 12, you know, pack of Ernie Ball Slinkies or something like that.
That's way before the everyday Brad Clifford change out. Yeah.
Exactly. So it was like, oh, And I mean, I think I maybe changed a string when it broke. I never sat down and changed all my strings.
No!
That was crazy.
Who had the money for that?
Exactly. I was just thankful I wasn't a bass player, or we had a bass player, because bass strings are so expensive.
Yeah. You broke an E on a bass.
Yeah. You might not play bass. You might play drums now.
Yeah. You might just switch. Yeah. It's like getting it stolen. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I broke a string. I got to figure something else out.
Yeah. We're
I guess
done.
I'll I guess be a lawyer.
Go back to school.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, so when exactly did you make that arrangement with Laura, and did it kind of just shoot off for you Against Me style from that point forward?
Yeah, that was, made that arrangement. I was in St. Pete. I was living like on a futon in at that time I was out of the apartment I was in.
Right.
And, was living on a futon with my girlfriend at the time in the living room of a one bedroom apartment of my friend Bob.
Okay.
Who I still know. He lived around the corner from me in Gainesville, where I just moved from recently.
Oh, nice.
Still hung out pretty That's much cool. on a daily basis, which is kind of weird.
weird to go back there.
Yeah. And it's like our birthdays are pretty similar. They're like a couple days apart. And then we both have like kids that are the same age, and their birthdays are like 10 days apart. Like super weird, all by coincidence, like just super strange.
Sounds like you're forever tied to Bob.
Yeah. Yeah. Bob Marshall. That's his name. Most generic name too. And then made that arrangement, and then went up to Gainesville shortly after, and like stayed at this like punk house Laura was living at, and just kind of learned the songs. And then went on a tour in a 1976 Buick LeSabre.
I
did kind of spring at last minute. I was like, oh, my girlfriend's coming too. Which it was like, they were like, oh, great.
I'll buy all the strings and bring my girlfriend.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is fun. But it was fun. Yeah, I mean, we went on that tour, had like zero money. It was like a month long, maybe longer. It was maybe a month and a half. Like,
We're talking proper DIY stuff, right?
Yeah, like 90% of the shows fell through.
Right.
It was like we drove up. Our first show was at Baltimore. The car broke down on the way to Baltimore. Laura had to take a Greyhound back to get it at some point. Like, it was just a mess.
Left the LeSabre in Baltimore?
I think it was in Jordan, North Carolina. Like, we didn't even make it that far. I don't even remember how we got to Baltimore. Someone picked us up. But yeah, and then we got the car back. It was fine. We played a few shows. We played in like Baltimore and Boston, I remember. I think we played a show in Pittsburgh. And then then there was like this huge gap of like 2 weeks, maybe longer, before there was a show in Seattle.
Oh, wow.
So we just like... we had no money, so we just like camped everywhere. Camped through Montana for like ever, like, which was awesome. And yeah, got over, like, did the similar thing through California, like played in Seattle. Then I think we played in like Santa Cruz and San Francisco, and then just kind of made our way back over.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And then after that, that was kind of it.
That's awesome. Now, did you are you one of those people that when you went on that tour and, you know, your car's breaking down and you're going 2 weeks across America just to play one show and that type of stuff? Or, you know, were you just like from the get super stoked? Like, this is, I don't care what's happening. This is just great.
Yeah. I mean, I was in it. Like, this is what we were doing. Like, I have nowhere else to go. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. You know, like,
that's awesome.
this is what's happening.
And
then, you know, getting back to Gainesville, that's when we like moved into that weird like office space. And then I was like, this is terrible. Like,
right.
I was working, like, washing dishes at a restaurant, and like, you know, I didn't have a car or anything. That was insane. Yeah. So I rode like a BMX everywhere. And Gainesville is, you know, relatively small, but it's like super hot, like washing dishes. And I was like, this is just fucking terrible. And I went back to St. Pete for a while. And ended up, I think I slept on my sister's couch for a while again. And then I got a job at like a Tire Kingdom where Bob Marshall worked and, and, worked at Tiger Kingdom for a while. And then like a little while after that, Bob ended up moving to Gainesville before me. And then, I had a couple other friends that lived up there and they like came down to visit. And then I ended up leaving with them, and then just never went back to St. Pete.
I mean, at that point when you were, you know, going back to St. Pete and this, like in your head, were you like, against me is my thing. I'm full time in this. This is what we're doing. Or was there still like some question marks as to like where it was heading?
I might have the timeline off a little. It's been a long time. I don't know. I didn't really, everyone kind of like, there was another tour that we went on where, like it was like a super awesome tour. It was like different lineup at the time. Like Dustin had entered and was playing bass. And, we played our last show in Bloomington, Indiana. It was like an awesome tour, like super awesome, like DIY tour. And on the way back, we got hit by a semi. Like the van rolled, like destroyed a bunch of gear. Like we were thankfully okay. I just remember like a lady running over to the van as I was crawling out and she was just bawling. Everyone thought we were dead. Like, it was insane. And then like the band kind of dissipated after that for a minute. That might have been when I moved back to St. Pete actually. And then like our drummer was gonna go traveling for a while and Dustin was like he was done, he was gonna go back to school. And and then that's when like I might have the timeline wrong. I don't know. Like I said, been a long time. And then that's when the acoustic EP happened, which was just Laura and Dustin. And then
That kind of started getting like more. I think that's when I had heard of Against Me, right? Like around then, because that record kind of got like a little more national, right?
And then I remember I was working at the sandwich shop in Gainesville. This is after I came back, I guess. And I got Warren a job there.
Oh, okay.
And he was working up and I was just remember like casual conversation, like, oh, what are you up to? And he's like, oh, I'm going to play, you know, music with Laura and Dustin. I was like, what? What the fuck? Like, I was super pissed.
Oh shit.
And I was like, God damn it. And I remember running into Laura and I was like, what the fuck? Like, and then she's like, well, we've been doing this thing. I don't know. Like you seem like you weren't into it. And I was like, well, no one fucking told me, you know?
Yeah. Right.
And then I showed up and we played and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then it just kind of went from there again.
Wow.
Like,
that's crazy.
Nothing ever happened.
What if you never ran into Warren again?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows? I love the serendipitous twists of fate like that, you know?
It's true.
Well, that's proof to any young person listening to this interview. It's one of the most important things in music is just stay around.
You never know what'll happen.
if you think disappearing and waiting for people to come to you is going to work, it's not going to work.
You gotta
get yourself out there. The party you don't want to go to, the show you don't feel like going to, go, because everyone will just forget you even play an instrument. You know?
Out of sight, out of mind, man. I know.
And those people who are like, I'm such a genius, people will come to me. They're not coming.
Never happens.
Nope. Not coming, guy. Get out of there. Yeah. Well, I was wondering, you know, like, Laura's always been kind of like a unicorn character to me, you know? Like, when you're in a room with Laura as one of those people that just kind of stands out a little bit to me. And like, you know, you've been around a lot of people like that. There are people like us, right? You're just in a room and you're like, oh, that dude. And then there are people who just kind of like, was she always like that? Someone who kind of like stood out from the crowd a little bit. Like when you met early on, did you think this person has, you know, a little extra, or was it just another punk kid?
No, like, yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, I don't know. Just one of those like attitudes, the way you like carry yourself. Yeah, like, I don't know. Laura has the attitude of like, you know, there's like that dumb saying, it's like, I may not always be right, but I'm never fucking wrong. It's like that, you know, like if Laura wasn't a musician, she'd be a lawyer. Like, she'd be a fantastic lawyer. Like, yeah. So I don't know. It's just like, she has that personality and the way, like, I don't know, just like super confident, like knows what she wants, how to get it. Like, it's just that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, never a doubt in her mind. I'm sure that she was like, I'm going to play music for the rest of my life. This is what I want to do. And I'm going to do it. There's nothing that can stop me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And that was pretty apparent from the get-go.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was never a doubt, you know? It's like, right. Oh, that's just what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess people usually don't turn into that. You're just either that or you're not, right?
I guess. I don't know. Like, I see some people, I'm like, well, how the hell did that happen? like I don't understand that at all, but okay,
well,
cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's be real. Not everyone in a successful band is a real musician, you know?
This is true.
We can safely say that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking back on it now, do you have a favorite Against Me song?
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough. There's a lot of them. There are a lot of songs. I mean, I like the ones that everyone else seems to like. I mean, those are fun. It's especially fun when, you know, you're like playing a show or something and then people are like super excited that you're playing that song.
Sure,
so that always goes a long way. Never, you know, no other feeling like playing a song and you stare out into the crowd and you're like, well, what? Oh man, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
Yeah, like, yeah. I thought we were doing this thing. Like, this was awesome. And now you're just
good.
Yeah. Now you're looking at your phone.
Yeah.
This sucks.
Why do you like tired? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I like a lot of them. I know that's not like a great answer.
What are like the Against Me songs you have to play where the crowd will be pissed if you don't?
I think you have to play like Pints of Guinness, Walking So Honest,
yeah.
Thrash Unreal, you know, like True Trans. There's just a bunch that kind of come to mind that, you know, the staples.
Right.
But then, I don't know, I like some of the weird like B-sides and stuff.
Sure.
I think honestly, yeah, I don't know. There's just a lot. And I mean, I think my favorite song to play live is a weird one, The Ocean.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like a weird,
sure.
So I don't know. There's like so much room for like kind of, you know, improvisation and like, I don't know. It's like a good one to just be like, I wonder what happens if I step on these five pedals at the nice. Same time.
Yeah, yeah, you know? Sure,
like,
sure.
Like stuff like that is cool.
Yeah, I guess then you'd probably don't have a ton of space in Against Me songs to do that.
True, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like stuff like that is cool. I mean, anything that's like super fast, like those are like Rebecca is always a fun one.
Right.
Like super fun to play because it's just like ripping, blazing fast and then like, you know, a minute and 30 seconds maybe and you're just like, what the hell was that?
You know? Right, right.
And then
and
it's
you,
done.
You don't resent those songs as you get older?
No, those are great.
Good.
Yeah.
What about Narrow It Down? How about, do you have a favorite Against Me album?
I like White Crosses a lot.
Yeah.
I like True Trans a lot. I like Shapeshift With Me. I mean, Axl has good songs on it. I hate the way that it sounds.
Right, right. It's so unique though. Like it's, you know, I can understand from your perspective, but to me as a fan, you know, cause I was a fan of your, you know, group long before I knew you. And that's, I can't hear that record any other way. It's like, it's just part and parcel with that album, you know,
for sure.
The strange snare sound and the like, I don't know. I dig it.
The it's snare not, was a tambourine. God yeah, damn it.
Yeah, like, yeah exactly. I mean, it definitely has a little bit of a St. Anger thing going on. You
know? Oh no. But people love St. Anger, right? Right.
In a good way.
Yeah.
But I have a question from, about that. Cause like when New Wave came out, you know, and I'm hearing some of the stuff that you were doing on that record. I remember even having this conversation with people where I'm like, it's like inevitable that James is going to do his own album or something. I'm like, no, I'm serious. Like, you know, I don't think until that, maybe before that record, but you know, it was a real highlight of how well you can sing and
how cool the parts are and how important they are to Against Me. That's like impossible to hear Against Me without your voice behind it. And I kind of had always assumed like, oh, James will probably go ahead and do like a solo record or something. He's got, you know, he's got everything you need to do. Whatever like stopped you from doing that, or you just had no interest at all?
I mean, I cannot write lyrics to save my life.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I suffer from that thing where it's like, oh, you just write a bunch of stuff down and then you like go back and edit it later. And I can't do it. Like,
okay.
I'll write a bunch of shit down and I'll look at it and be like, oh my God. And like, there's no saving this and just throw it away, you know?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that just kind of stopped me. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it kind of sounds nice. It's like freeing, the idea that like you don't even, you're like, nah, I'm good on that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, I am good. Like,
that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it might happen eventually. I don't know. There might be something. Not like dropping hints here or anything. I'm just saying, right, you know, right, maybe. I don't know. It could. Like,
I mean, we're in the pandemic. A lot of people are making solo records of fake drums right now. You know,
that's right. Yeah, yeah. This isn't over. Like, it's still the coronavirus is still real. Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I guess my like kind of pivot during this whole thing was like, you know, finding the random box of pedal parts that I like accumulated and forgot about in the back of the closet, and then was like, oh, well, I guess I'll, you know, stay up late and listen to like a podcast or something, or watch like a dumb YouTube show and see what I can make of this stuff, you know?
Yeah. That sounds really relaxing.
Yeah. I mean, it is in a weird way. It's like a strange puzzle.
Like, how so?
I mean, they don't all have to fit together like the right way, but they have to fit together so nothing lights on fire. but you know, sometimes when they have to all connect a certain way to work, you know, all the components. So, I mean, there are ways to connect them where they make really bad sounds that are interesting.
Right.
And I think that's just part of the fun, you know, it's like, what happens if I do this here, you know, and then just kind of learning from that.
This is awesome. So this is a perfect segue into a segment I came up with just for you, James.
Oh, wow.
So Brad's a guitar player.
Yes.
And often when we have guitar players on here, you know, there are sections of the interview that sound like fucking Tape Op magazine.
Okay.
And now that you're a pedal maker and you're even deeper into this world than you've ever been, I came up with a segment called Nerd Corner for guys.
Awesome.
And I have a couple audio questions coming in from people you may or may not know.
Okay.
Who are going to ask you a nerdy guitar and pedal question.
Oh, I love this.
Now, Brad, please fire up the first segment of Nerd Corner.
Hi, James. When you were developing the Bowman, did you use any kind of schematics, or did you just try to use your ears and base it off of the original circuit?
Ooh. This is fun.
That's Rocky from Mercy Union.
I thought it might have been.
Yeah, and you know, Rocky is probably almost as big of a nerd as you.
He might be a bigger nerd. And I mean that in the most you know, like praising way possible.
Yeah, in the most revenge of the nerds way possible.
Yes, exactly.
Sure.
He's a leader. Yeah. Yeah, so the Bowman was based off of the Klon Centaur, which is like the most sought after, famous, whatever, overdrive ever out there to some people. And I am lucky enough to have one myself, one of the original ones.
Does that mean it's quite expensive because it's sought after?
There's not a lot of them. The guy who made them, Bill Finnegan, is kind of a weird, reclusive gentleman and had, you know, made them for a while. So I'm not sure how many are actually out there, but he stopped making them for a very long time, and then they just kind of became like sought after. There's like a few different versions of it. Each of them a little different, but the circuit for, like, if you take the back cover off the pedal, the inside, the circuit board is like gooped with like epoxy, so you can't see what it is.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
So I was lucky enough to acquire one of these and was playing with it for a while, and had looked at a few schematics online, and everyone just kind of took a stab at it and, you know, kind of came up with like what maybe what diodes he was using, or maybe, you know, like what I don't know, like what kind of resistors were here, and you know, just kind of made their own kind of like, I don't know, assumptions of what, well, you can see some of the components through the goop, you know? So,
right.
I took mine apart. On the back of it, there are some solder points that are not gooped. So I would measure some values of things. I would compare them with some schematics I found online and just kind of made my own assumptions and, put a couple together, tested them against the original, and they sounded pretty close. Which I thought was kind of cool.
It's total detective work, man.
Yeah. It's like, made like a couple other changes here and there. And now it's just kind of, it's sure it's based off like my silver Klon Centaur that I have. But I think it just kind of sounds like its own thing now. It has like, you know, a little higher gain. Yeah. I think the like EQ sweep of the tone knob is a little different. And yeah, so I mean, it still does the things that it does, like what a Klon can do, and a little more.
Nice.
That is how I would like to put it.
Love it,
Brad. You think that was that? You're my, you got to be my nerd barometer here. That seemed like an appropriate answer.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I just love the detective work because I think that's like, that's pretty intense. That's got to be really time.
There's there's, I can't, I'm like failing to remember the name of, there's this site that does like a breakdown of like circuits.
Yeah.
And they do like every aspect of the circuit, like the BIOS grid network, the, right. You know, like the gain structure, and they do one on a Centaur. So I did a lot of research on that. I played, you know, mine, I've played others in the past. I have a few like different clones of them as well. A lot of people make their version of it, you know? And I didn't really plan on making that being like the one pedal, you know, but it just kind of, I sent a few to people. And then, people seem to really love it, and it's just kind of done its own thing.
So is it true that you've just been doing this like in the last year and a half?
It's been
a COVID project for real?
Yeah, like it really That's has been. Like crazy. I tinkered with stuff a little bit beforehand in, you know, like blew up ICs and melted stuff and you know, made a few things and then they would work for a little while and then not. Like I think the actual launch anniversary of the Bowman Audio Endeavors is actually Sunday, the 18th. Oh, cool. I think we'll be year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And yeah, just doing research and seeing how like with technology changing and, you know, like saying even for like, right, you're like producing and putting out your own music, the same thing is true for other, you know, other aspects of the music industry or just, I mean like things in general, like you can build your own computer. You could probably figure out how to build your own fucking cell phone.
Right.
You could, you know, and along with that, like the DIY pedal community is huge. Like,
right.
There are so many people out there that build awesome, awesome pedals and just starting this and like reaching out to those people. Everyone I've talked to has been super friendly, super helpful with questions. Like you meet people that do like schematic, like I can read a schematic and I can build it on a strip board. I can't lay out a PCB like designed to save my life. Like I've done it. They don't work. Like I'm not good at it. I'm learning. I've only been doing this for a little while, but I'm slowly learning. But you meet people that they do that. You can like, you know, right. Throw them a few bucks and they'll be like, oh, I'll help you out. And then like help you learn along the way.
That's cool.
And so it's like this little community of DIY builders as well. And there's a ton of them out there and everyone I've talked to and reached out for like advice and help has been super awesome.
So how many pedals do you have now?
Technically, like when I first started, I would just build some like clones of things. And would just kind of be like, I don't know if anybody wants a delay. Hey, I made these three delays, you know? and same with like a couple other things. But now I have the Bowman Overdrive, which is like the Klon take. I have like a boost pedal, which is called the Fortune and Glory. That is kind of has like, I don't know if you've seen a picture of it. It kind of looks, based, like the graphics are based around like Indiana Jones.
Cool.
Brad Clifford designed that. he also did the he's done the layout art design stuff for all of the pedals.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I was going to say, I appreciate, you know, from a non, you know, I don't know what's going inside these pedals, but, I appreciate the sleekness and like the simplicity of the design. It's very sharp. And I see a lot of them that go the exact other way, you know, trying to like stand out with like really bright colors and weird graphics and calling it crazy shit. I like it. It's a very classy presentation.
Thank you. I'm trying to keep it like kind of simple, and naming things is super. I know, you know, being a musician and stuff like trying to name a song or name your children or anything is really difficult. And it's even more difficult in the pedal world because there's only so many names. I'm sure all of them have been used. And if you use something that is kind of in reference to something that's super well known, you're probably going to get like a cease and desist, like trademark infringement, letter. And then the last pedal is the pedal that was my design. I got some help with the layout and stuff from this company called Adventure Audio, some dudes in New York. It's called the Hot Potato.
Right.
That's a good name.
That's the Marshall pedal, I mean, right?
It's a hot potato.
Is the percolator not a regular model for you?
No, it's not.
Because that's the one I listened to some videos, and that was the one that I was like, oh, this is the pedal I might like.
It did sound really good.
Yeah.
And I made a few of them. And then in my, like, you know, reaching out to other people in the DIY community, like some of them have their versions of a percolator and I didn't want to like try to step on anyone's toes or try to like, you know, try to do something else that someone else was doing. So I was just kind of like staying away from that circuit.
Oh, okay.
So I made a few of them just because it was fun. And I also love that circuit. I only made three of them, two of which, one I sold to Brian Venable, that plays in Lucero.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, oh, this pedal is insane. He's like, I got to get another one. I was like, I don't have any more. I only made three.
Right.
Someone bought one. I sold you one and I kept one for myself. And then he's like, it sounds insane. It's crazy. And I was like, oh yeah, it's like Steve Albini's like favorite pedal. And he's like, who the hell's Steve Albini? And I was like, oh, you know, like Big Black Schlack. And he's like, I listen to that Schlack stuff. Not for me. He's like, love this pedal though.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's so Lucero that they have no idea who Steve Albini is.
Yeah, he's like, what? Steve, what? All right, cool.
That's fucking hilarious.
And then, so I ended up just sending him the one I made for myself. So I don't even have one.
I see.
Yeah. I was like, oh, just take this one.
Well, you're setting the market for the future. This is going to be one worth millions.
I hope so.
All right. So speaking of who we just mentioned,
okay,
Brad, let's roll number two here. Uh-oh. Of Nerd Corner.
Hi, James. This is Brad from Seattle. Big fan, and I would love to meet you someday.
Aww.
Question for you is, if you had to pick one fuzz pedal to live on your pedal board for the rest of your days, which one would you pick and why?
Fuzz pedal.
And my second question,
two questions,
is, of all the pedals that you have made, which one is your favorite and why?
Wow.
Brad, always extensive. Yeah. Thorough guy.
Very thorough. I don't really use fuzz pedals on my pedal board.
Shouldn't Brad know that?
Well, I mean, there's like, okay, sure. There's one. I think my favorite, it's still on my board. I haven't seen my pedal board in like almost 2 years too.
Oh,
like,
right.
So I don't even remember what's on it. Let me see if I can find a picture real quick. But I believe
it's just with all your Against Me shit locked up somewhere.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, technically I think there's only one fuzz pedal on it. So I guess that would be my favorite. And it's been the only one that's been on there for a while. And it's by this company called Smart People Factory, which went out of business about 10 years ago. Love their pedals. And it's called the Red Threat. It's based on a Russian Big Muff And I tend to, I made a few of those myself, and I tend to lean on that circuit a lot. I really like it a lot. So I guess the answer to that question would be a Big Muff of the green Russian variety.
Okay.
And then favorite pedal I've made. I mean, the only pedal that has been a 100% like design on my own, because there's only so many pedals out there, you know, or schematics or anything you can go for. Right. I love the Hot Potato, but no one else seems to really like it.
Oh, really? Is that the lowest seller thus far?
It's the least favorite. But you know, that's fine. I mean, I'm just starting. It's only been a year.
Yeah. And you know, listen, you know, from being in a band for so long that that quality doesn't always determine sales, you know?
It's true.
So the good stuff will shine through eventually.
Yeah,
maybe I'll buy it. It'll get there. Maybe that'll be my first pedal, James.
Your first pedal. You know, you can use pedals on drums too.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I've thought about it. And then that's about as far as I went because I'm a Luddite. that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I like the of the three I currently have, I think they're all great. They all do something a little different. And I mean, I love them all equally.
Aw, you're quite the salesman.
Yeah.
Well, usually we would go into a segment called Mystery Friend here. But since my last Nerd Corner question is the same as my Mystery Friend, we're not even going to bother because you would have guessed it so easily.
Okay.
But there is a question from the same cat, in quotes, James, you're a lovable and gentle man, but let's shine a brief light into the power of your darkness. Please tell us what happens when a stranger is on top of your bus in Boise, Idaho.
Oh, man. Okay. So we were on tour. I don't remember when. It was a little while ago. We played a show in Boise. Can't remember the name of the venue. Might even be a knitting factory.
Boise's got a knitting factory?
Yeah. There's like a few of them around. And I think that might have turned into one. It's like you've been there. It's like the place that's like down in the downtown, like Boise area.
Like the one place in
Boise. Yeah. It's like brick outside. There's a loading dock. There's like a gay bar that everyone goes and drinks at afterwards across the street.
1,000% know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I think it turned into a knitting factory briefly.
Okay.
So we played a show there. And like you do after some gigs, you have some beverages. I had a few. I put myself to sleep. I woke up to the bus kind of, you know, a loud thump on top of the bus and like some ruckus.
And are you in a bunk?
I'm in my bunk, in my boxers.
Are you a top bunk, bottom bunk?
I take middle, driver's side, first row middle.
Oh, I'm with you, dog.
Yeah, that's my spot.
I'm a middleman too.
Yeah, I don't know why. I like that spot.
It's easy. To me, it's the easiest entry and exit.
It's true. Like the top bunk, like I'm kind of short. Yeah. I don't want to like climb up while people are trying to sleep and stuff. No. The bottom bunk, I used to do the bottom, and then like, I don't know. It's like where all the shoes gather.
Yeah, so close to feet. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I'm not into it. Middle is like a safe bet for me.
Same.
So I hear a ruckus out front. I hear people arguing. I kind of like come out of my drunken, you know, slumber, still in my boxers. And I like go to the front door and I see these like three drunk dudes arguing with everybody. And I'm like standing there and I'm like trying to assess the situation. And I'm still like kind of out of it.
Yeah. A little murky.
Yeah. And I was like, I just see the one guy who's being real mouthy and I just fucking leap off the stairs and I grab him around the neck and put him in a sleeper chokehold and just like start choking the shit out of him. like fuck this, I'm putting an end to this right now.
Yes.
I'm like wrapped up, I'm in my boxers, I think, at this point. Yeah. Still like just that's it. Maybe
fucking
I threw
Tony
a shirt
Soprano
on. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. And I'm just like laying on the ground like, and the other two dudes are like, what the fuck?
What, they were not expecting the leap. Yeah.
No. And good. I was just like, fuck this. I'm over it. I want to go back to sleep. Basically. Sure. It's like, stop being a dick. Don't jump on the bus. You're being an asshole.
Right.
There's no reasoning with these people. I'm just going to choke one of them.
Let's stop this. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do that. I'm like, hold on. I remember the one guy was like, let him fucking go. He's turning purple. And then I remember like the bigger of the guys like kind of leaned over me, ready to punch me.
Uh-huh.
And then it might have been Brad. I don't know. I don't even remember. Someone, they like looked up and it's like everybody standing there.
Right.
And they're just like, you know, you don't want to do this. Like if you hit him, we're all going to beat the shit out of you basically. Right. So the guy like kind of backed off and then I like let the dude go. And then, yeah, I think I went in. I maybe even like had another drink to calm myself down.
Yeah,
and then,
I
put myself back to bed. And that was it. Yeah.
So the lesson to take from this, diplomacy does not work.
Does. Sometimes there has to be violence to prove a point.
Yeah. No. I think in that instance, you probably needed to scare the shit out of someone. Sounds like you were successful.
And if it had to be like a chubby tattooed guy wearing boxers, like jumping and putting you in a sleeper hold in the middle of the sidewalk in front of your friends, then so be it. Just don't jump on people's buses. Don't fuck with people's shit. Mind your own business.
Never.
Mind your own business.
Man, we were on tour once with old Chuck Reagan and someone decided, it was like a show in Belgium, and someone decided to run into the bus.
Oh, geez.
And I go to put my stuff in my bunk, like after the show, like my backpack, like change of clothes or whatever. And there's some fucking Belgian kid in my bunk.
Oh my God.
who jumps out, like thinking it's funny and like runs out of the bus. I'm like a little shocked. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, Jesus Christ. And I walk out of the bus and I'm just getting my bearings. I'm like, that fucking kid was just on my bunk. Like, what is happening? And a few people are milling around and the kid's like about to go around the corner. And I actually was not planning on engaging it. Like, I was like, all right, like, that's fucking weird. Let me get some new sheets. I'm tired, you know? And all of a sudden, Chuck Reagan starts running around the corner. And I'm like, oh God, Chuck's gonna tear this guy apart. I'm like, let's go. Like, we gotta save this Belgian kid from a bear attack, you know?
Yeah. He's gonna be skinned and barbecued.
Save him. He'll be on a trigger in no time. Yeah. And I walk around and what do we find? But Chuck like has this guy like in his hands, in his like bear paws. But all he's doing is like schooling him on like why you shouldn't do that. You know what I mean? He's got his hands on him. He's like, brother,
listen, that's brother,
that's someone's home. You know, and he's like going into the whole thing and just made the guy feel like shit for 90 seconds instead. I was like, man, I could never handle a situation so well, you know?
I love it.
If I'm running around the corner after someone, by the time I get there, I'm probably frantic. I'm just going to be pushing and hitting, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It's like, I love a stern talking to from Chuck is, you know, probably.
Luckily, I've never gotten one.
Yeah.
Chris Wallard, I got one from.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's another podcast. But the one last story I want from Mystery Friend, of course, Brad Clifford told me that story.
Okay.
It's true that Fat Mike played bass on one of your albums?
He did on the True Trans record. That record was like really discombobulated and weird to make. It was made in like several sections.
Oh, okay.
Just like super weird time. And two of the songs, Fuck My Life 666 and Unconditional Love, were like written later in the writing process.
Mm.
And we didn't have a bass player. We didn't have anywhere to record. So Laura and I went to Motor Studios in San Francisco, which was Mike's old studio.
Oh, okay.
And he actually played bass on those two songs.
Wow.
It was just like, hey, here are the songs. Sent them to him beforehand. Got there. and was like, hey, so did you come up with anything? And he's like, nah, no, I listened to that one a couple times. And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, all right, cool. Do you want to like, you know, figure this out? And he's like, well, I did come up with this baseline, the unconditional love baseline. He came up and he's like, oh, I kind of heard this like Who thing. And like, as you know, the baseline's like, do, 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 do. Like that was all yeah. Mike. He just like, kind of came up with that. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Wow.
And then the other song, Fuck My Life 666, he was like, that song's like, the structure of it is kind of weird. And he just had a hard time following it. So he just broke it down into sections. It was like, this song's super weird. I can't tell where I'm at, but he just broke it down to sections and did the bass for that as well.
That's awesome.
But yeah. Those two songs were done, at everything except for the drums, like, the guitars, vocals, bass, were all done at, Motor. Nice. I think that's right.
And as the savvy businessman Mike is it, did he try to take some points on those songs or something?
No, he did not.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. No, well, that's cool. It was free of charge. We did pay for the studio time.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Now, James.
We did also stay at the studios, which had like a dungeon built into it. There's like, yeah, there's like some weird shit in there.
But, like, we're talking a leather studio?
Yeah, there wasn't that much weird stuff in there, but there was like the like bondage horse thing you get like tied right. up to.
Yes.
There's one of those. And like, I was like pretty terrified to sleep in the bunk bed thing there, but I did it anyways. It was fine.
So you slept next to the bondage horse.
It was right by my head. Yes.
Yeah. Did it have like just a sexy vibe coming off it? Like you knew that horse had seen some things?
It had seen some shit for sure, you know? And I was like, all right, cool, you know?
Well, yeah, here I am.
Yeah, whatever floats your boat, you know?
That's fucking funny. So, James, now that we're an hour 15 in.
Holy crap.
I think it's safe to get to the raise.
Okay.
All right. Now, I came up with a list that I want you to check and confirm. Okay.
Hold on a second. I gotta plug my computer in here. This might go a minute. All right. Oh shit. Oh my god. Told you I'm in like the makeshift nursery.
Oh no, do your thing, man. Yeah.
All right, hold on. Oh, all right. I'm in.
Awesome. Good. Okay. So I came up with a list, which is the top five Rays of all time.
Ooh, okay.
Which, you know, being that they've had a short career, it gets a little murky towards the end. Okay. So, you know, as probably the most diehard Rays fan I know, actually definitely the most diehard Rays fan I know, and a person who has thrown out a first pitch at the game, am I correct?
That is correct.
I mean, you're about as big of a source as anyone could be, as much as Kevin Cash. So here's my list. Now we're going to go with the obvious. Number one.
I'm trying to scribble down some right here as well. You said top five, right?
Yeah. Wait. Okay. Then you do yours first.
Oh, okay. Hold on.
Yeah. Let's see
if we come up
the same off the top of the dome.
Okay. I think the greatest number one. Why don't we go? Are yours in any particular order?
We start one. One's fine.
Or do you want to start with five? Is one being the highest or the lowest?
Highest.
Okay, let's start with five.
Okay.
Okay. My number five, I would have to say, is Carl Crawford.
Okay. Lower than I thought.
Okay, well, I'm trying to factor in these people here. You know, there's a lot of players. Do you go with, like, historical players? Do you go with current players? Do you go with, like, all-time greats here? I mean...
All of the above.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to narrow down to just five.
Well, Carl Crawford's certainly on the list, so you nailed that.
Okay. Okay, I'll just give you the few that pop in my head here. Five, I guess four, I would say brief tenure, but Wade Boggs.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And then also on the list, I mean, we got to put our friend BJ Upton on there.
Wow. Yeah.
And then what is that, four? Uh-huh. Crime Dog, Fred McGriff.
Okay.
And number one, in my opinion, these are no particular order except for this one, I guess. Greatest Rays player of all time, Evan Longoria.
Yeah, I think Longoria is a shoo-in.
Yes.
As the number one player of all time. Now, I got to be honest, our list only matched up twice.
Okay. But I mean, I threw it. I was just, you caught me off guard. I didn't know we were going for it. Right. Okay. So
let me bring
list.
Up one thing to you.
Hold on, hold on, hold on. Okay, if I revise this and I take Fred McGriff and Wade Boggs off because I didn't know how deep we're going here, uh-huh. You got to put Ben Zobrist on there.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, other than that, I mean, trying to think, shit, there's been.
The only other two people on my list are two pitchers.
Two pitch. Oh man, I didn't even get into the pitching. Shit. Yeah, there's been some good ones. Wade Davis was really good for a minute. I don't know if he makes a list. Okay, let's hear yours.
Okay. My list was Ben Zobrist.
Yeah.
James Shields.
Oh yeah.
David Price.
I forgot about David Price. Too.
Carl Crawford, Evan Longoria. I had Ben Zobrist and McGriff kind of tied at five.
That's like 2008 Rays, like in a package right there.
Yeah, that's almost the whole team, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you're right. Damn, Upton, my boy, deserves a shake for sure.
He was great. I mean, you gotta the historical players like Wade Boggs and Fred McGriff. You gotta, you know, you gotta give them some love. Pitchers, I didn't even, you know, I don't know. I was just caught off guard. David Price, James Shields. I mean, that 2008 staff, like Garza was really good. Songstein was really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, even like late, like Isringhausen was around that time. Like he was good. Like,
yeah. That was a good team. Fun team.
Troy Percival was there for a minute. Like he was still like fucking throwing knuckleballs in there, I think.
I love how deep your Rays fandom goes.
I mean, there's been so many. Like, and then there's like, Delmon Young was there playing center field for a minute.
Delmon Young.
Elijah Dukes, if you want to keep going down that.
Well,
that
how deep are we going? We go for the top 50 of all time? We're getting to Elijah Dukes.
Rocco Baldelli, career cut short by, you know, like some crazy.
Could have been
underlying.
A great...
Yeah. Like, I mean, he was part of that 2008 team in the early year, earlier in the year. I don't know. I don't know.
I love it. I think we did good. We definitely, at least, I think we ended up doing the top 20.
David Price, Chris Archer had two really great years in St. Pete.
See, this is why I'm going to take the Yankees shade from earlier, because watching you put this together, this list just makes me feel really good.
I mean, and then
I mean,
you go
we're 2 minutes in and you're getting to Elijah Dukes and Chris Archer playing for 2 years. It makes a Yankees fan feel all right, you know?
You know, you because
I'd still be in like Derek Jeter, Joe DiMaggio territory on my list, you know?
Jesus. I mean, everyone knows how great Derek Jeter was. I mean, it's yet to be seen how he is as an owner.
It's great. As such a sycophant Yankees fan, like, I kind of root for the Marlins now.
You have to, right?
I have to. I'm just still pulling for my man. I want DJ to succeed, you know?
It's true.
So, all right, let's get off baseball before Brad commits Harry Carey or something.
No, come on, Brad.
He doesn't like it.
What does Brad like? We don't talk enough about Brad.
I'm not a Scrooge. A baseball. You guys talk about whatever you want. Talk about what makes you happy. This is a safe place.
Okay.
You're a great color man, Brad.
We got the
You're like Andy Richter. We got my Andy Richter over here.
I was happy with the geek talk on the pedals. So that was great.
Okay. We can do more of that. That's fine. I want you to feel included.
Yeah, yeah. But so I want to finish off here with, like, you know, as you know, my life is indistinguishably tied to Bruce Springsteen at this point because of the band and being from where I'm from and blah, blah, blah. I shouldn't say it like that. It's a positive thing.
Yeah. I was like, what did he ever do to you?
Yeah,
Jesus.
Yeah. No, like, I don't know. I said it like that. So, of course it's a great thing. But, you know, I know like the bands and artists from Gainesville kind of get into the same thing with Tom Petty, right? Like,
for sure.
Like that's sort of the barometer for everything. And
So what's your relationship with Petty, and did it ever get like annoying to you hearing about that, or you're just like stoked on him all the time?
No, I mean, there's like some stinkers of Tom Petty songs for sure.
Sure.
But I mean, Tom Petty's great. Like one of my favorites. I mean, there definitely was, I don't know, like everything kind of gets compared back to Tom Petty in the Gainesville, like Gainesville's super small, you know? So like,
right.
If anyone gets out of there, you know, everyone's like, oh my God. Like, I mean, there's also like Don Felder from the Eagles is from Gainesville. He went to Gainesville High School.
Oh yeah.
There's like weird ties to like, I mean, not to mention almost everyone in the Heartbreakers band grew up in Gainesville. Like,
that's cool.
Stan Lynch had like a music store that we used to go to all the time.
Oh really?
It was called Sims Music and Sound. Him and this guy, Jeff Sims, had this music store.
That's awesome.
And like, yeah, it was cool. Like they had this trunk, like big road case trunk in the middle of the store that had a drum set up on it, which was one of Stan Lynch's like Heartbreaker kits.
Wow.
And every once in a while you go in and he would like open up the trunk and like take guitars out of it and he would sell them.
How cool.
And one of them, like Laura has, like, I think it's a 64 Jaguar that came out of that trunk that belonged to Tom Petty.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah. And I bought a guitar from there that is, it's like a TV yellow Les Paul special. That was Mike Campbell's.
Whoa. Really? So,
that's a cool guitar.
So you own a Mike Campbell guitar.
I do.
Very cool.
I do. And we used to go there. We buy like amps and guitars and all sorts of stuff from there. And they were great.
Is it one of those situations too? Like, you know, like you said, such a small city. Do you just constantly, are you meeting people who like, oh, I saw Petty, you know, his first show back in the day. Oh, I went to high school with Mike. Like, is it just that local of a connection still?
Not really.
No.
I mean, there's like, you know, the people that have like connections still and like bring it up every once in a while, but it's not like I don't know. I think Gainesville, like maybe back in the day used to be like a little more prevalent, but it seems like Gainesville's changed so much and changes every year because, you know, being small and being a college town, there's like new people here and there every year. So
yeah, right.
I think a lot of that gets lost, but
that's true.
But there's definitely like, you know, people still bring it up or talk about it. I do think it's funny that like after, you know, from what I hear, like he notoriously hated Gainesville. Like he hated the place, never really went back.
Oh, really?
Only played one show there in like his entire career after after moving away. And it was in, I don't even remember what it was, 2007 maybe. We went, it was at the like Gator basketball arena, O-Dome. The Strokes opened up. It was really weird.
That's weird.
Yeah. But we went to the show. That was like the first Tom Petty show there in like 25 or 30 years or something like that.
Okay.
And now he's like, you know, passed away. There's like Tom Petty Park and like all these murals and stuff. And it's like, well, he fucking hated Gainesville. Like, everybody like, it's like now the town's like, oh, we love Tom Petty.
Was he actually like outspoken during his career about that?
I don't think it was like Gainesville in general. I think it was just like, you know, maybe there's nothing that happens there. You know, it's just like really slow moving.
Yeah. Now that Gator Dogs is closed, what the fuck?
Gator Dogs? What?
I love that spot.
What is that?
That was that college hot dog spot that was like around the corner from No Idea. On the main strip.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that place.
The same guy owned it forever. I always saw him in there, but they had veggie dogs.
They did. I totally forgot about that place. Dude, that's an old school. Like
that was my Gainesville spot. I'll tell you a funny story about that because I went to Gator Dogs. That was like any of my bands were in Gainesville and then especially Gaslight, I was like, yo, I'm eating at Gator Dogs. Like, who's coming? And mine was the Tater Dog. So I got the veggie dog and it had fried onions, cheese sauce, and tater tots. And it's one of the greatest fucking things ever. I could eat three of them right now if it was in front of me. And I remember on that tour, we were planning on having a grilled cheese eating competition in Austin, me and Sleazy. And we were prepping for this competition. I'd been talking shit for weeks. So I was like, yo, you don't even fucking know. And the loser of said competition had to get a grilled cheese sandwich with wings tattooed on them somewhere. So I was taking this pretty seriously. And we went to eat together at Gator Dogs. And he watched me like slam like three of these things. And he's like, oh, shit. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. I think that's when I first got in his head on a competitive level, was watching me be a fucking pig at Gator Dogs.
That's amazing.
How did Gainesville change that much? Is it just so much more oriented towards the college now than it used to be?
Yeah, like the college is like ever expanding.
Right.
And with that comes like, you know, more employees, more students, more spaces are needed for those people to live. So it's like full of condos now. A lot of the older buildings that, you know, used to have like, you know, Wayward Council, like the indie record store and like venues and stuff are gone. And there's just like, you know, either been torn down with plans to build these condos, or there's like these huge, you know, I say huge high rises, but for Gainesville, you know, a 12 story, like giant condominium is huge, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Especially up and down the main, you know, university, which was just small, like a really small town feel.
Pretty low town,
Yeah, like most of those are all gone now. The downtown is like changing a little bit. I mean, it's just like, I don't even know the last time you were probably there, but maybe a few years ago at Fest or something. But from then, like,
I think actually I saw you the last time I was there.
Okay, I remember that. Oh yeah, I do remember.
You remember that day? That was someone was talking a little shit.
And you're like, "What the fuck, man? Where this guy bought the shirt?"
Tell the story. I don't care. I was watching.
It was pretty funny.
We showed up to that main stage. You know, Mercy Union was playing like the next day, and you know, at a bar or something. And I show up to this stage, and I see Dead to Me playing. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. Like, I love Dead to Me. I haven't seen them in ages. I'm listening to a couple songs. I'm like, I'd love to get Dead to Me hoodie, you know? I go up to a merch. I know those guys. I probably could have gotten one if I wanted. But I went up to the merch table. I spent fucking $30 or whatever and bought a new hoodie, and I'm rocking it. And literally, like, 6 minutes later, Chicken's on stage. I haven't seen the guy in years. Gaslight's had no connection with him. And he starts talking shit. I'm like, where the fuck is this coming from? He doesn't even know I'm here. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. It was just perfect timing, like running in you, right? And you're like, God damn, I just bought this hoodie.
You and Vanessa like saw me first, right?
Yeah.
After that. And then I just straight up jerseyed him, you know, like he got off stage and I see him backstage. And I'm like, Chicken, what's up, man? And I could see real quick. He's like, oh shit. Like, why is Benny here?
Yeah, you know, didn't think
he's
that
not
was gonna
following
happen.
My career. Yeah. And and I'm like, what's up, dude? Like, just bought your hoodie, rocking it. I'm like, that was cool that you were talking shit on stage. Where the fuck did that come from? You know? And Chicken, like, of course, it's just like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. You know, like immediately it's just like, I don't know why I did that. You know, starts pulling that shit. I got to be honest, had a tough time wearing the hoodie after that. I was like, come on, man.
Yeah, you don't even know where it is. It's gone.
You know, I did enjoy wearing it this last couple of years because it has like a cop car and fire on the back. And, you know, I enjoy a statement piece in the time of Trump. So, you know, I didn't hate the hoodie, but I can't wear it to like a show right now or something. I can't rep, you know, rep.
It was perfect timing though.
Like, it really was.
Walk in, you're like, God damn it.
And, you know, luckily I saw a couple people from Red City Radio and stuff. Got me a little high and I stopped caring, but
yeah, for sure.
You know how it is. I totally forgot you two were the ones that I saw when I was all fucking worked up.
It was immediate. Like he just bought the hoodie. He just said that. And then you walked up and we could just see it on your face. It's like, oh man.
I think Danny's going to say something to this guy.
Yeah. See, and that comes right back around to like Jersey.
Yeah.
The difference, you know, it's like you're a little pissed. You're not just going to blow it off. You're going to be like, hey, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, like 100%. I can't even imagine blowing that off. I would stew for days. Like, you got to get that elephant out of the room like immediately.
That's true.
You
know? Just immediately. Yeah. Just address it. Move on. Enjoy your weekend. Right.
No more Gator Dogs. Too much college. I think we're better in Jersey, man. Let's have our good pizza, our honesty, and maybe we should see each other.
That I mean, I would love that.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, you're not that far away.
No, no, and I got a great place to host you and Vanessa and the child these days. We should do it.
That would be fantastic.
Thanks for coming on and doing this. That was really fun.
It was fun. I enjoyed every minute of it.
You know what I forgot to ask him and I should have?
What is that?
One of the best Goop shows that I remember was in St. Pete's.
And right?
It would have been time just right for when those guys were there. And of the right age, it probably would have been about 16, 17. It was all, we did a show in 95 with Sam I Am that was sold out at the State Theater, I think it
makes
was.
Makes sense for that show, yeah.
And then we came back the next, let's see, we came back, yeah, maybe it was a year later. We came back, and I think we even were getting some radio play then, and we played to a packed house. I think it was sold out too. That would have been 96. So like it kind of lines up.
Yeah, it's a good chance. You think, I don't know, if they might have been too supercharged to go see Sam I Am.
Yeah, I know that maybe not Sam I Am, but I was hoping like I have this wish that like, wouldn't it be awesome if the Young Against Me's were there?
I mean, let's say it's possible.
I'm gonna say they were there.
Let's go ahead and say it's possible. That's a cool town. I've actually spent a lot of time in it. I got a father in Tampa now. I got a brother-in-law in St. Pete. He's really active in that community. I just saw some images today of him wearing a fucking hazmat suit on a paddleboard with that red bloom going on down there.
Oh, really?
Red tide. Yeah, it's
bad.
I mean, he showed all these images of literal dumpsters on the right on the edge of the sea that people are using to dump dead fish.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it's really quite bad.
That sucks.
I know. What a bummer.
Yeah.
So if anyone could do anything to help, you know, let's do it. Try to get in. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. Like, what's the best way that, like, someone like me can effectively help the environment these days? Like, what's someone who's, you know, I own a house, I own a car, I need a car, like, you know, what I do for work with my family, like, what are like the actual tangible simple steps that make an actual impact?
I would say that you personally do have a small but reasonably sized sort of following that you could spread the word to. They're probably all fucking enlightened already about stuff like that. That's probably the best thing you could personally could do. I've always taken the approach of like the sort of like just plow ahead with the way that you feel everybody else should be, which
let's say more tangible, less emotional. Like, what actually makes more of a difference? Me buying an electric car, me putting a solar system into my house. I already do a little composting. You know, like what's an actual thing you can do that will, you know, if you set that example, it actually like could trickle into something more sustainable. I got to put a fucking windmill on my lawn or something?
No, I mean, do everything.
Yeah, do all of it. Do all the stuff.
There was a time when solar panels cost so much they were not worth it, you know?
Right.
And people did it anyways because of the reasons I'm saying is they wanted to be proactive, even if like, you know, it wasn't saving them money. They, you know, it's like it was the right thing to do. And now because of that, they are affordable.
There's a bidet at my new house.
Ooh, that's awesome.
So
I love a bidet.
So I've been saving some toilet paper.
Dude. Yeah. If I ever build a house, there'll be a bidet in every bathroom.
In every one.
Yeah.
Big fan, huh?
Oh, yeah. I had a quasi-European girlfriend years ago, and she kind of turned me onto the bidet. And
I'm sorry, what does quasi-European mean?
I don't know, half European, let's say.
Much appreciate James coming on. Always looking forward to seeing the music he will create, and now the pedals he will create. I'm sure I'm going to be blasted with him
twice a week for the remaining days of my life if James is successful.
Yeah, it's Bowman Audio Endeavors is the name of the pedal company. And
they're very handsome. Very handsome pedals.
You put an underscore in between those. You can look them up on Instagram. There's some cool videos on YouTube that show them being used. His Instagram is Jimmy James B. His Twitter, which I don't think it's a ton of use, but it's Jimmy James_B.
Cool.
And then, of course, you know, everybody else involved there. There's some
You know against me. You've heard of the group. You've heard of the group. And big thanks to Vanessa Burt, old friend, current wife of James, who connected us and gave me some nice meaty information getting into it. She's the best.
Right.
So thanks to Vanessa as well.
And thanks to all of you and the patrons who continue to support us on Patreon.com.
Yeah. Thursday night got deep this week.
got a little too deep.
Got deep. Went to like 11 o'clock. Existential. Just what I wanted.
Come on. You love it.
I do. What else am I going to talk about?
That's good. You're right.
Well, what are you guys listening to? I'm like, all I'm listening to is Turnstile. Can we talk about death, please? Anyway. So thanks to everyone for listening to Going Off Track. The podcast, the flamethrower, the lunchbox. We need more merch.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.